You are Locked On Clippers, your daily Los Angeles Clippers podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to a new episode of the Locked On Clippers podcast. I'm your host, Lucas Han, editor-in-chief of ClipsNation.com, and today is Monday, November 27th, 2017. So today on the show, we're going to talk about basically where the Clippers are right now in terms of the little picture, this little five-game stretch that we're in that I've talked a little bit about, and how they're doing against these teams trying to turn their season around. And then in the big picture, what that means for them going forward. We're going to talk a little bit about their two wins since our last episode. Last Wednesday, they won over the Atlanta Hawks. And then on Saturday, they won over the Sacramento Kings. Those two games over the Thanksgiving long weekend, we'll talk about a little bit. And then to close the show, I'll touch briefly on some of the, you know, pending possible roster moves that the Clippers could be looking at making. Not going too in-depth on that because obviously it's a pretty big topic, but I do want to at least address it, and then hopefully we can talk about it more in the coming days. So first, just kind of talking about where the Clippers sit right now. So I talked a little bit, I don't know if I had mentioned it on a previous episode of the podcast, but I've talked a little bit on Twitter and on the website and some other places that this five-game stretch that the Clippers are in right now could end up being really, you know, really deciding in how their season ends up going. And the reason I say that is because they came into this five-game stretch coming into this game against the Hawks, where they were 5-11, so 6 games underneath 500, which is a pretty big deficit to climb out of. But fortunately, it's early enough in the season that they have time. But what was big to me is that at 5-11, they had their next 5 games against 5 sub-500 teams. Atlanta, the last place team in the Eastern Conference. Sacramento, the second to last place team in the Western Conference. And then their next 2 games coming up are against the Lakers and the Jazz, who are currently at 8th and 9th in the West, so not quite as bad, but still both underneath 500, similarly to the Clippers. And then the Dallas Mavericks, who are the last place team in the Western Conference. So they played, you know, 3 of the 4 worst teams in the NBA in this 5-game stretch, and the other 2 games are both against sub-500 teams as well. So really an opportunity, I thought, for the Clippers' season to go in one of two directions. If you play badly during this 5-game stretch, and even though they've won the first 2 games, this is certainly still very much up in the air, because I think going 2-3 in this stretch would be a serious failure. I think they probably have to go at least 4-1, but if you struggle during this stretch, then you put yourself in a position where now you're potentially even farther behind 500 than you were before. So if they go 2-3, they would finish at 7-14. At 7-14, now you're 7 games under 500 instead of 5-11. At least you're only 6 games under 500. So if they lose these next 3 games, then getting into the tougher December schedule, it's going to be very difficult for them to get back to that 500 mark, especially with Patrick Beverley out for the season. On the other hand, if they can rattle off wins in the next week against the Lakers and Jazz and Mavericks, then they'll be looking at being 10-11 heading into that a little bit tougher December schedule. And 10-11 is basically 500. If you go about 500 in December, and you're about 500 before December, you're going to be about 500 on January 1st, which is around when Milos Teodosic comes back. And, you know, you feel pretty good about going into the 2018 portion of the season if you can be 500. I don't think you feel very good about it if you're going in 6 or 7 or 8 games under 500. So this is a pretty pivotal stretch for the Clippers, because it's a chance for them to really swing their record back towards that 500 mark and start being competitive again. So I did a Facebook Live video taking some questions from fans at halftime of the Clippers game against the Kings, when the Clippers were down big at halftime of that game. And I said, this isn't the kind of game that you can afford to say, oh, it's one of those nights. The Clippers need this game. And they came out with a lot of energy and passion in the third quarter, and kind of a sense of urgency that reflected that it was not just a normal regular season game, that it was kind of a game the Clippers had to win against a really bad team to try to boost that win total because of how much they've struggled. And they came through. They need to keep coming through for the next few games, get close to 500 again before the schedule starts getting difficult, hopefully get Danilo Gallinari back soon, and then have a reasonably decent, you know, December in terms of staying around the 500 mark, get Milos Teodosic back, and then try to build above 500 in the second part of the season. One thing that Doc Rivers has done in the last couple of games when the Clippers won that I think has been really beneficial is he's moved Lou Williams into the starting lineup over Sindarius Thornwell. Now, I think Sindarius has played well, and I've sung his praises on the show all season long, but I just think that with the personnel that the Clippers have right now, a big reason why we saw Austin Rivers and Blake Griffin struggle so much during that losing streak was because Austin Rivers and Blake Griffin were the only two offensive threats in the starting lineup. Wesley Johnson can shoot, but that's it. DeAndre Jordan is not an offensive threat, and Sindarius Thornwell is not an offensive threat. So when it's just Austin Rivers and Blake Griffin, and Austin Rivers isn't even that good anyway, I mean, he's kind of like fringe starting caliber, defenses can really key in on those guys. And that's why we saw Blake be so inefficient during this losing streak, and it's why we saw Austin have, you know, such horrendous struggles, even though there wasn't really much he could do because of the way the defense was focusing on him. Putting Lou Williams in there sort of draws attention away from Austin and Blake in a way that's allowed both of them to thrive, even like early on in the Sacramento game when Lou wasn't playing very well. Just the fact that he was taking some defensive attention away from Austin and Blake allowed both of them to get off to better starts. So that's something that I think Doc Rivers probably should stick with going through. Maybe when Danilo Gallinari comes back because he's a scoring threat, then you can change the starting lineup again and put Sindarius Thornwell back in there for defense. But at least until Gallinari comes back and possibly beyond, I think that Lou Williams should probably stay in the starting lineup. He's playing such great basketball this season anyway. I think maybe even when Gallinari comes back, you give him a chance to stay in that starting role. And if it doesn't work defensively, then you can make some changes. But especially while Gallinari's out, I think Lou Williams in that starting role has been really, really beneficial for the Clippers. And Doc has pretty much handled staggering those lineups and making sure that Lou comes out first and then comes back in with the second unit. So that hasn't really been an issue. I want to talk a little more specifically about these last two games against the Hawks and the Kings, mostly the most recent game against the Sacramento Kings. But first, I want to remind you guys that the Locked On Clippers podcast is listened to by 98% men and 80% men between the ages of 18 and 44. So if your company is interested in hitting that target, you should be sponsoring this podcast. This is your spot. Our rates are reasonable, so you can email me at lhan.clipsnation@gmail.com to find out more information. Now, getting into those two recent games against the Kings and the Hawks, and I want to focus more on the Kings game just because the Hawks game we're a little bit removed from, but I'll just briefly address some things from that. So first of all, kind of what I just hit on with Lou Williams helping everybody out. In that game, I think we saw basically Lou and Austin both have really solid games from the starting guard positions. Lou Williams, 20 points and 8 assists. He had a lot of turnovers, but at this point with where the Clippers are, unless the turnovers are becoming a huge problem from a team perspective where they're getting like above 20, I don't mind that Lou, Austin, and Blake are being a little turnover heavy in the last couple of games, because it just shows that the ball is moving a little more and they're being a little more creative and they're looking to find guys. So I don't necessarily mind Lou Williams having 6 turnovers in each of the last two games, because he's also had 8 assists in each of the last two games. And I don't think anyone else on the team is getting you those assists. So you'll take the turnovers, you know, that necessarily have to come with them. And then, you know, against the Kings, Blake had 6 turnovers. Austin didn't have any. Or, I mean, against the Hawks, Blake had 6 and Austin didn't have any. Against the Kings, Blake had 2 and Austin had 4. But in those two games, the team finished with 15 and 16 turnovers, respectively. It's not great, but you'll take it to get those assists from those guards. And then going back to the Hawks game, so Lou Williams, 20 points, 8 assists. Austin Rivers, 18 points, 5 assists, 7 of 12 shooting. Both really productive. You know, Lou's the kind of guy who takes and makes difficult shots, kind of a la Jamal Crawford in the last few years. He doesn't necessarily need a lot of help. You know, he's either going to make his shots or miss his shots. I don't think having offensive threats around him necessarily makes him more or less potent. But for Austin Rivers and Blake Griffin, having Lou Williams there is a huge help. And I think we've seen this pretty clearly in the last couple of games. And the other thing in that Hawks game that really jumped out was that Wesley Johnson had like his best game ever as a Clipper. 24 points, he made 6 of 7 threes. He was just hitting everything. And he's been really confident lately. He played well against the Kings as well, I thought. So hopefully this is something where Wesley can keep playing well. His shooting is looking good. His per 36 numbers are good. He's getting, you know, a little bit of everything in terms of he's averaging a steal, he's averaging a block. I don't know that necessarily it's sustainable over the course of a full season, but it's been really good so far. And then Blake, of course, had that triple-double against the Hawks. 26 points, 10 rebounds, 10 assists. There's a lot of stuff in that Hawks game that it felt like was maybe a little unsustainable in terms of, like, Blake Griffin isn't going to average a triple-double. Wesley Johnson isn't going to make 6 of 7 threes. The Clippers aren't going to shoot 15 of 30 from three-point in very many games. But as far as that game goes, you'll take the win on the road where you can get it. The Kings game, I thought we saw maybe even a little bit of a better win because it wasn't like, oh, really hot shooting and Blake having a supernova game triple-double that led the Clippers to victory. But rather, the Clippers struggled. They allowed 61 points in the first half. They didn't shoot the ball well. They were down 14 at halftime, and they found a way to come back and win. Now, I think the biggest thing in terms of the team struggling in the first half probably just came down to three-point shooting. You know, there's a lot of different stuff going on in any game, but one really easy way to look at something is to check the three-point shooting numbers, because a lot of times that can just be like random variance, shots bounce in, shots bounce out. And in the first half of that Kings game, the Kings were 7 of 10 from deep, and the Clippers were 1 for 14. In the second half, the Kings were 4 of 11, and the Clippers were 8 for 14. So it's kind of a reversal there, where the Kings went from really hot to kind of average, and the Clippers went from really cold to relatively hot, shooting above 50% in the second half. Lou Williams hit those four threes in the third quarter, and that was a big part of what allowed the Clippers to come back and what kind of, I think, explains the poor defense in the first half. Sacramento was hitting shots. Even straight from the beginning, they were just hitting some pretty difficult shots. Scalabissier made some shots that you would normally be pretty fine with him taking. So that's where you fall behind. But like I said in the first segment, this was the kind of game at halftime where I said, you know, you could easily say, oh, this is just one of those nights, right? It's an 82-game season. The other team is shooting 70% from three. You're shooting 1 for 14 from three. It's the end of a road trip. Nothing's falling. It's one of those nights. But because of where the Clippers are, the position that they're in after that 9-game losing streak, they really couldn't afford to have one of those nights, which is weird to say in November. But like I said, I really do think that this 5-game stretch could prove to be pivotal for their season. And they came out with an intensity in the second half that reflected that. They only allowed 10 points in the third quarter, and really the third quarter started with two quick Sacramento buckets and ended with a Sacramento buzzer beater. In between that, it was a 29-4 run by the Clippers for the vast majority of that quarter. For like the 10 plus middle minutes of that quarter, the Clippers were on a 29-4 run, and they really dominated. And then they were able to hold on down the stretch. Buddy Hield got really hot. I think Buddy Hield had 16 points and made 4 three-pointers in like the last 6 minutes of that game. So, you know, this is the kind of thing that I talk about a lot with a team like the Golden State Warriors, where the Warriors, first of all, are really good. But aside from being really good, they can get really hot and have these supernova stretches with Steph and Klay and now Kevin Durant, where there just really isn't anything you can do, and they're going to go on that like 20-4 run, hitting deep threes. And again, there's just not a whole ton you can do. The way that Buddy Hield was playing in the fourth quarter, so, you know, there isn't necessarily a lot that you can do when a guy's hitting threes with inches of separation like that, unless you're going to run double teams at him, and now all of a sudden you're leaving other guys open. So you just kind of try to weather the storm and hope he cools off. And what I've said for the last several years about the Warriors is the best way to defeat that kind of supernova 20-4 run that they go on is you kind of have to be so solid and so perfect all game to build up a 10 or 12 point buffer, so that when they go on that run, you're left with a close game at the end instead of being left down 10 points. Because if you play them close all game long, when they go on that run, now it's a blowout. If you can slowly build a tiny lead 2 points by 2 points all game, when they go on that run, now it's going to be a close game. Now, this is obviously a much lesser scale than that. Against the Warriors, you pretty much have to be perfect for 40 minutes to weather that storm in the last 8 minutes. against the Kings, the Clippers obviously were not perfect for the first 40 minutes, but they did enough to build a buffer so that when Buddy Hield started getting crazy hot at the end, they were able to hold on. And they put themselves in a position where they had that 10-point lead as a buffer, and that buffer was able to absorb sort of the Buddy Hield run. And the Clippers ended up tied with the ball with 13 seconds left. Instead of if they'd been tied at the beginning of that Buddy Hield hot stretch, they would have ended up losing by 8 or 10 points. So they get in this position where they're tied with like 13 seconds left. Blake Griffin hits that follow-away game winner. Wasn't necessarily the best play or the best shot, but you don't always get the best play or the best shot in the closing seconds of the game. And then the Clippers were able to stop the Kings on their last attempt and get away with the win. So I feel pretty good about that win. I'm not sure, again, that everything that happened, I'm not sure that it necessarily reflects that they're like a quote-unquote good team all of a sudden. And as I've said for the last few weeks, I think if you just look at the talent that they have, especially with Gallinari and Teodosic and out and now Patrick Beverley gone for the season, they're not necessarily a great team on paper. You don't expect them to be that good. I think you would expect this team, the guys that we saw playing against Atlanta, the guys we saw playing against Sacramento, to probably finish as, like a medium lottery team over the course of an 82-game season. So it's not shocking to me that they didn't blow out the Sacramento Kings. But I do think that, especially maybe feeling a little good coming off these next two wins, they're in a position to be competitive against teams like the Lakers and Utah. They're in a position where they should really beat Dallas coming up, then hopefully get Gallinari back, and Gallinari gives you a big offensive talent boost to help carry you into December. Now, the last thing I want to talk about on today's show is a little bit of potential roster moves that the Clippers could make coming up in the next few weeks here to try to counteract the fact that they've lost Patrick Beverley and that they have these other injuries. But first, I want to give a quick shout out to my two friends, Harrison Fagan and Anthony Irwin, who host the Locked On Lakers podcast. We haven't talked a lot about tonight's upcoming game against the Lakers, and we're not really going to talk about it until tomorrow after the game, kind of looking back on what happened. But I encourage you to go check out the Locked On Lakers show. Harrison and Anthony are both great guys. They're both really smart basketball hosts as well. So I definitely encourage you to check out their perspective of the upcoming game. Now, to close the show, I do want to address, I've been getting a lot of questions on Twitter and on the blog about roster moves that the Clippers could make. So the big, hot, trending thing that everyone wants to talk about is potentially trading DeAndre Jordan. It's something that we've seen, rumored that different teams are calling and whatever. And there's a few different reasons for this. So the first is that a lot of fans are really upset at DeAndre Jordan this season. They feel like he's not playing super well and all that. And we've talked about that a little bit. I think it's a little unfair. I also talked about how I think he tends to be a little bit of a letdown when other guys are hurt. And that's not necessarily an excuse, but it is something that I've noticed over the last couple of years. And, ultimately, I don't think that that's going to be a factor. I don't think, DeAndre is playing poorly, so we're going to trade him, is something that is necessarily coming into play in the Clippers front office. I do think that there are two other reasons why a DeAndre trade could happen. The first of which is that with Patrick Beverley out, with Milos Teodosic's status unclear, the Clippers are kind of a little front court heavy. They have Blake Griffin on a max contract. They have DeAndre Jordan on a big contract. They have Danilo Gallinari on a big contract. One of their better role players this season, Wesley Johnson, is a 3/4. Willie Reed and Montrezl Harrell are both centers, and they've both played well. So you do have, potentially if you trade DeAndre, even if you don't get a center back at all, if you did some sort of three-guy center rotation between small ball around Blake, Willie Reed playing 18 minutes, and Montrezl Harrell playing 18 minutes, and then Blake playing small ball the other 12 minutes, you could be pretty comfortable with your center position at that. It wouldn't be nearly as good as it is with DeAndre, but because the Clippers are already a little front court heavy, potentially trading DeAndre would allow you to get a guard, where the Clippers definitely need more help at guard at this stage in the season. So they could help balance the roster if the right deal comes up. But looking around the league, I just haven't seen anything that really entices me. And I haven't seen any fan proposals that I think check both boxes of A, actually making the Clippers a better basketball team, which I think is important to do if you're going to make a trade, and B, being a reasonable trade that the other team would probably accept. So, like, I threw out a trade like George Hill and Willie Cauley-Stein. I think that would be a perfectly fine trade because Willie Cauley-Stein is he's not nearly as good as DeAndre, of course, but he's a good young center who would be able to play some of those minutes. And then George Hill is a really steady veteran guard who would immediately become the Clippers' starting point guard for the rest of the season. But I don't think the Sacramento Kings would accept that trade. But I do think maybe that's the kind of framework that you're looking at would be like a young prospect big guy who can play some of those minutes and potentially grow into the starting center role long term, and a really solid veteran guard. But I just haven't seen a deal that really makes sense for both teams yet. I think the third reason that DeAndre could potentially be traded is probably the most likely one to be relevant, and that's his contract status. The Clippers have been trying to get an extension done with him. An extension hasn't gotten done. He doesn't have an agent, so he's negotiating on his own behalf. It's very, very kind of a weird, convoluted situation. And if the Clippers feel like they can't get a deal done, and they don't want to pay him next summer, and they don't want to lose him for nothing, then that severely drives down his value to the point where the Clippers could make a trade that doesn't make them a better basketball team, but potentially protects them from losing him for nothing next summer. Now, personally, in terms of not only a DeAndre Jordan trade, but potentially the other, really easily movable pieces that the Clippers have, as far as Lou Williams, Wesley Johnson, Bryce Johnson, I just don't see a trade out there. I haven't seen anything proposed that I think significantly helps this team. They are in a position where they definitely need to be looking for guard reinforcements, but in terms of the contributions that Lou Williams and Wesley Johnson are giving, I don't think that you're going to be able to find an upgrade by moving one of those guys. Bryce Johnson makes such little money that you're very limited in the kind of trade you can make for him. And then looking in the free agency market, I just don't see a lot of guys who really intrigue me that much. Probably the best name in the free agent market at point guard right now is Ty Lawson, but I really have no idea what's up with, with his overall situation, as well as is playing Ty Lawson as the backup point guard for 12 minutes a night really that huge of an upgrade over playing Juwan Evans for 12 minutes a night when you could potentially be developing your 21-year-old rookie? I just don't see it as necessarily being worthwhile, especially on this Clippers team that is no longer in the Chris Paul era of short window, must win now. I think it's okay to kind of take the long view and give Juwan Evans some minutes, even if he's going to struggle a little bit at times. Again, that doesn't mean the Clippers shouldn't necessarily be looking, but I just haven't been able to find anything yet that I think actually makes them a better team. I haven't spent hours and hours looking over different scenarios yet. So, by all means, if you think that you've come up with something, send it to me on Twitter, send it to me in an email, and I'll let you know what I think of it. But those are really the options. Probably is a big trade around DeAndre Jordan, trying to find an upgrade for Wesley Johnson or Lou Williams, because their contracts are both kind of movable pieces, or swapping Bryce Johnson for someone else on their rookie deal who's been underwhelming as a guard from another team, where that team might be looking to swap a guard for a big, or potentially looking into the free agency pool. But again, I haven't seen anything yet that makes me think it's really worth making a move. I do think the Clippers should be looking and they should be monitoring different situations that they come up regarding guys who may become available for trade, guys who may have sort of contentious relationships with their teams and get bought out and be available in buyout season to help kind of bolster that guard rotation going into the playoffs. But for now, I think I'm actually probably okay with sticking with letting Juwan Evans and Senarius Thornwell both get some burn off of the bench. So that's going to do it for today's episode of the Locked On Clippers podcast. Tomorrow, we will be looking more closely at what happens in tonight's game against the Los Angeles Lakers and how the Clippers are looking heading into, I believe, Thursday and Saturday are their last two games of this five-game stretch that I've been talking about so much against the Utah Jazz and Dallas Mavericks. And hopefully we will get some news regarding Danilo Gallinari's return from that injury, which should be, based on the timelines we've been given, should hopefully be happening at some point late this week or early next week. So thanks for listening, guys. As always, if you have any comments, questions, or feedback, you can hit me up on Twitter at LucasJahan. You can email me lhan.clipsnation@gmail.com. Make sure you follow along online at www.clipsnation.com and follow the ClipsNation Twitter account at ClipsNationSBN. Be sure to go on Facebook and like the ClipsNation page to see my live Q&As during halftime of some Clippers games, and also like the Locked On NBA page to get the latest updates from all of the podcasts on Locked On NBA Network. Thanks for listening, guys. This is Lucas Hand signing off for Locked On Clippers.